thanks everybody that's here right now. This is our second blockchain business and development meetup here for Bradenton. We had attorney Greg Karsh at the one last month. And I was focusing on legal issues. And we're going to try and do something a little different each month. For those of you that were here last month, for Greg, he's been invited to the World Blockchain Conference, and he'll be speaking up there in July. My name is Henry Raines. If you weren't aware of that, I host a weekly radio show focused on blockchain cryptocurrency on WWPR 1490 AM. There's cards here with the time, the podcast site, and things like that. You can get it on demand. So today is about healthcare, and we're going to have a short view of the people here who feel like they have some sense of blockchain in general. Okay. Good. And what about healthcare in particular?
Why don't you just give us a quick test of your voice to make sure it's loud enough for everyone.
Good evening. How does that sound?
Everybody good? Everybody's good?
Outstanding.
Do you want me to minimize your screen, or you're going to control it from that end?
Yeah, go ahead and minimize the video. That's fine.
And of course, I haven't given you a full introduction, so I'm going to allow you to do that yourself. And you just mention something if you need some help with something, I'll just let you go.
That sounds great. Thank you very much.
If we have any questions, I'll alert you.
Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good. Well, good evening, Bradenton. How are you all this evening? Good, good. Well, first of all, I would like to apologize for not being there in person. I am in Nashville. I had a meeting this morning that got set up very late in this process, and I was not able to get from Nashville to Tampa and then to Bradenton, I thought, before traffic or with traffic this afternoon. So I opted to try and do this remotely, and I hope this you all find this to be a valuable and useful presentation. First and foremost, just as an introduction, you know, I have been developing technology companies and software, or I'm sorry, services businesses and outsourcing businesses and consulting firms all sort of around the healthcare space for about 25 years. And the last 17 years, I've been focused on, or had a lot of focus on, solutions that are targeted toward helping healthcare organizations better manage their healthcare practitioners, and specifically their credentialing, privileging, and appointment, you know, within, you know, their organizations. You know, and of late, I guess, you know, blockchain is screamingly new across the marketplace, but I've, you know, focused on trying to develop, you know, the use case for blockchain with regard to simplifying, you know, the credentialing and appointment process to the greatest extent possible, using blockchain as well as, you know, or should say in combination with data science and artificial intelligence to create a platform we call the Professional Credentials Exchange, right? So, you know, with regard to blockchain as a whole, I thought I would spend, you know, maybe 30 minutes to give an overview of blockchain itself for those who may not be familiar with it or only know it through Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, and talk about use cases in healthcare for blockchain that somewhat align with what the IBM video just went through, but some other things I think you'll find very compelling. And then we're going to drill deep into, or do a deep-ish dive into, the credentialing process and exchange that we're putting together, and show you just how you know, that process works. If we have enough time, I will also kind of walk you through a quick demo of what we're building, just to help you all further visualize what we've got and what we're doing. And I'm sure you'll find that to be pretty neat as well. Okay. So before we get started, any questions about the agenda or suggestions or anything else? Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, let's get going. So first of all, I work with a firm here in Nashville called Hashed Health, and we are the global leader right now in healthcare blockchain solutions. You know, we are really creating a company of ecosystems that are developing, you know, solutions that have, you know, that have deep implications in the healthcare industry. you know, our first solution, coming out of HashedHealth is this professional credentials exchange, or ProCredEx, or even shorter PCX, as we like to call it, that we'll talk more about later. Another very compelling, a product called Bramble that is going to be utilized to help healthcare organizations sell in an open market way healthcare services like MRIs or teeth cleaning or plastic surgery procedures, what have you, and allow for direct to consumer acquisition or direct to anyone, frankly, acquisition of those services. And then a newer product that's still on the drawing boards a bit is a contracting engine that's going to be focused on helping in the whole payment clearing process. So we are working very hard on these kinds of initiatives, and as I said, I think we're well regarded in the marketplace right now as the leader in this space. As I mentioned before, we want to talk about a very non-technical integration to blockchain. I myself am not a technologist, although I am a trained software engineer from my schooling. I haven't written code for 20 something years, so. If there's deep, dark technology questions that you have, if I can't answer them, then I can certainly get that information and provide this feed as follow up to you all. We want to talk about all the concepts and frankly clear some noise in all candor, that you probably have heard in the marketplace about blockchain and so forth, and kind of really get to what are the key things that make a good blockchain solution. And then we'll talk about a practitioner identity and credentialing in detail. So as the video just mentioned a moment ago, what blockchain is a collection of technologies. It's not a specific technology, but a collection of technologies that basically creates an immutable chronological shared ledger. And it truly takes the middle persons out of transactions. The trust that we have in transactions today, where we trust folks like escrow companies or banks, or stock clearing houses, those transactional, clearing organizations kind of go away with blockchain, and the software itself takes over that role. It also takes data from the old school or current and older school method of relational databases, and really creates this huge transaction processing engine that gathers and distributes data all across the application landscape. It allows to completely, totally redesign how information and value about that information, which we're trying to talk a lot about, is designed. And it allows for and will create scores and scores within each industry, different new efficient ways of moving information and value around. So as we all know, the first blockchain itself was Bitcoin. And with regard to Bitcoin and the blockchain that it resides upon, I would basically call that very, very embryonic from a technology perspective. It was basic, like the internet browser was in 2003 or 2004, whenever it first came to market, right? Very simple, basically allowed counterparties to exchange value back and forth, between each other, and know both the history and the provenance of a specific transaction. And obviously it's been exceptionally successful. I'm neither a proponent nor an opponent of cryptocurrency as it stands. But billions and billions of dollars, are currently being transacted between counterparties and a host of cryptocurrencies right now. And, if you look at places unlike the United States, places like Venezuela or South Korea or Argentina, where they have you know, whole swaths of their population that don't trust their currency from an inflation or from a, you know, from a valuation perspective. You know, Bitcoin created a place for folks to create value, take it from a fiat currency like a, you know, a Chinese yuan to, you know, to a Bitcoin. And that Bitcoin, you know, grew in value over time as more and more folks invested in the market and so on and so forth. Who knows, you know, what the market valuation will be next year. It could be trillions of dollars or it could be zero. You know, we'll wait and see. And I think the jury's still kind of out on all of that. With regard to the Bitcoin engine itself, though, we saw and we were able to show that trust moved to the software, and we were able to show how digital assets, there's another key term here, are transacted across value chains. So what the blockchain did with regard to cryptocurrency was remove the need to have a bank. This is fundamentally, you know, was the revolutionary, you know, use case around Bitcoin. It removed the intermediary, and the software served as the bank, and everyone in the Bitcoin business per se could see what was going on inside the bank and feel comfortable with, you know, with banking within that environment. So the second, you know, wave of blockchain came through a technology called Ethereum. And, you know, Ethereum basically built substantially on the initial Bitcoin blockchain and really focused on business and consumer use cases. And this is where the light started going on for, you know, the IBMs and the Microsofts and the Intels of the world, where they could see, my goodness, you know, this technology could be the next big thing in terms of technology and applications. When you look at what blockchain kind of became in the eyes of, you know, the folks who drive the daily technology market, it really became sort of Web 3.0. And, you know, whereas the World Wide Web, you know, version one was all about, you know, basic stuff. Today we consider basic, you know, search engines and, you know, connectivity of folks and having open access to apps and email and all that stuff. You know, version two was really, you know, the 2000s, you know, and the early 2010s, you know, where you're focused more on social integration and interaction and the unit of measure, you know, was basically, you know, social confirmation, things like likes and so forth. And where blockchain is taking the internet now is really focused on moving value by and between counterparties. So you know, the market is expected to grow very quickly. This year, I would say, is really going to be the year where enterprise blockchain solutions, meaning, you know, large scale market level solutions, are going to be begin being developed and piloted. And I think by 2020, you're going to see major new innovation taking place in huge ways, via this technology. So, you know, you hear a lot of noise out in the marketplace around, you know, what is, you know, where blockchain can be applicable, or what it is and how it can be applied, I should say, to a solution. And there are four key things that we believe need to be in place to create an environment for a viable solution. So first of all, market level, multi-constituent processes, right? Having a blockchain solution that's internal to a company and does things like manage their own supply chain activity makes no sense, right? You know, you can build a solution without blockchain all day long to manage what goes on inside the four walls of a company, and you don't need blockchain, right? So think about, you know, if you step back, think about solutions where you've got multiple disparate parties who right now, because of technology, gaps or a lack of connectivity or a lack of a common way of systematizing, transactions, needs to interact with each other. And that's sort of the baseline frame for a solution. The second is a need for trust. The trust is functionally a requirement, for the solution, right? And often, a place where trust is currently lacking or must be maintained by an intermediary or series of intermediaries to complete transactions. Transparency, meaning, if you're a member of a blockchain solution or consortium or exchange or what have you, being able to see things that are important to you and always see them and always know where they've come from, where they're at in their current state, and where they're going to, right? That's another key thing that we saw with Bitcoin. Fourth, and finally, incentives. Again, this is a really important point that we need to all, share here. That, when you build a solution, you have to really focus on aligning incentives across all members of that solution, right? So, if you have a solution that basically focuses on sticks, meaning, if you do something or don't do something, something bad happens, that solution is likely not going to be successful. However, if you look at this digital value, the asset value that you're looking at in the solution, you can basically ensure that the folks who are counterparties to transactions enjoy the benefit of that value and are incented to participate in the, in the solution. And I'll be frankly giving some examples of all this here in just a minute. So there's two levels of value and complexity, right? The first level is this shared ledger, right? Meaning, a history of transactions and being able to see those transactions, and interact with them. And by doing so, you move that trust factor to what's called a protocol in Bitcoin, meaning the engine that's running the solution itself, the blockchain engine. And also to overcome, limitations of current infrastructure, right? Secondarily, things like smart contracts, which if you think of it, are like little mini programs that you define, or the solution defines or jointly define, what have you, that these little mini applications run rules and run, transactional event processing, sort of in the background and continuously to do things. So, if you have these smart contracts, you really can reduce the amount of administrative, overhead and really, focus on all kinds of new applications for these digital assets, this data that you're generating, throughout the, these different applications. Oops. So this is a very important point. My colleague John Bass, put some of these slides together and he really hammers this, this point home. Finding the union between the right business model, the right technical model, and the right governance structure for a solution is hard, right? There isn't 5 million, obvious solutions, in markets where blockchain makes sense. You're hearing a lot of noise about that right now. But when you really boil down, what kinds of solutions, what kind of use cases are out there in the marketplace where you've got the right business model, the right technical model, and the right governance structure, and find that sweet spot between all three of those, is quite difficult, right? So in healthcare, we've got lots and lots and lots of crazy stuff, frankly, going on. If you look at the market itself, it is just full of friction, right? Meaning that, everything is hard. And to get anything done requires significant amounts of effort. And this is sort of one of the first check boxes for why healthcare and blockchain are such a strong fit. Everything's transactional focused, right? Meaning that to do anything, it requires an order or it requires a claim or something else. And you know, it's the whole market's been built up around, you know, an accountancy sort of model where everything needs to be, you know, hard, frankly, right? There's no choice. You have a completely irrational pricing model, meaning, you know, I was presenting this at a conference a couple of weeks ago in Southern California, and I said, imagine if you were to walk into a McDonald's and go up to the counter and say, I'd like a quarter pounder with cheese. And the person on the other side of the counter looked at you and said, that'll be $5,325. What would your reaction be? You'd laugh, turn around and walk away, right? Well, this is literally how we buy healthcare in the United States today, right? We have no idea how much something is going to cost. And we're basically told how much something is going to cost. And then it gets chopped down by 80 or 90% by our healthcare insurers, you know, if you have it. And we're left to pay for kind of what's laying on the floor. And, you know, there's no reward system whatsoever for quality or efficiency or what have you, other than reputation. You know, and it's just crazy, you know, in terms of how the market works today. You know, there is, you know, huge levels of inefficiency with regard to, you know, how much things cost to perform, how much things cost to be reimbursed, you know, and virtually every kind of transaction, you know, that's out there. And, you know, it seems, you know, like we spent the last 40 years throwing trillions of dollars of technology investments to just decrease the, frankly, the efficiency of the marketplace and not do a whole lot of good, right? So, you know, what we have in healthcare is a huge opportunity for change. And what we don't have to do is go around and say, okay, we need one common system for this and one common system for that. Rather, we can use blockchain solutions to unify the digital health assets that already exist in the marketplace. So if you look here at this slide, you know, if you look at, you know, what these assets are, they're electronic medical records, they're electronic claims data, they're product and supply inventory data, health services, patient data, and patients and the data about themselves, identity and credentials, clinical trial data, right? All of this information heretofore has just existed in systems and has been created, frankly, probably duplicated hundreds of times and stored and managed and maintained. And there's virtually no exchange of this information by and between different counterparties in the market. It takes place.
Anthony?
In a way. Yes, sir.
Yeah, we have a question, if you don't mind taking a question in the middle of this.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay,
great. Hi, Anthony. My name is Raj. I'm very new to blockchain. From what I'm understanding so far, is obviously a compelling case like the one you're making on the screen right now for what blockchain could provide. It also seems, from what I'm beginning to hear, is corporations had a huge interest in blockchain, particularly at the beginning of the year. And now, I'm using this report that came out in May from Gartner, where they said, beginning of the year, there was 73% interest in major CIOs in the technology. Now in May, that number has dropped down to single digits. So in your example, they talk about healthcare, mm-hmm. What are some of the things you think that would be have to be done so that blockchain becomes something that gets adopted now, or do we have to wait a couple of years until, you know, the application becomes a little bit more mainstream? It seems like people are looking at this as it's got a lot of future promise, but very little current application.
So it's a very good question, and I'm going to go back to something I mentioned a moment ago, and that is where blockchain is at in its enterprise adoption lifecycle. Right? Blockchain is almost exactly where the internet itself and HTML as a technology was at in the mid 90s. You know, it was something that it had tons and tons of promise, and everyone could see the implications and the applications for the technology, you know, down the road. And we're literally at that stage. You know, what the major technology vendors like IBM and Microsoft and Intel and Oracle, et cetera, are all developing enterprise technology platforms for blockchain And you know, folks like us are just now starting to build these applications for, you know, using this technology. So I think it's reasonable, especially in healthcare, to say that it's going to be, you know, 2 years probably before we see some real mainstream adoption of large scale blockchain solutions. I will tell you just very personally, and we'll touch on this in a moment, you know, our plan is to build our credentials exchange and pilot it next year for about 6 months, and then take it to market, you know, late 19 or 2019. So, you know, that's 18 months, you know, from now before we'll really have it in general availability and large scale adoption being, you know, pushed forward, right?
Yeah. My question was, thank you. Yeah. My question was on the blockchain technology. I don't have a lot of it. Not on the crypto or
Yeah. So let me continue on and go, kind of get through this. I do have some stuff I think you're going to find very compelling regarding actual real stuff to be to you know, drive it. What the gentleman a moment ago was asking, right? So the bottom line I want to leave you with on this slide is that you know, what the blockchain presents is an opportunity to create value from those digital assets, right? You know, so with regard to things like Bramble, this technology that my colleagues here are developing with regard to tokenizing, you know, digital assets, right? And create, you know, allow, let's say a radiology center to say, you know, tomorrow I have 4 hours where I have no MRI bookings, and I'm going to sell or offer, you know, to our my physicians that are part of, you know, my radiology group, an opportunity to resell those to patients at a discount, and or, you know, to be able to say, I'm going to give you 100 MRI scans for X number of dollars per scan, and then if you, you know, come, you know, you got to use it in a year, you use these scans over the course of a year, and come December, you know, if I'm not going to use the remaining scans I have, then create a secondary market for reselling those scans to another party, you know, at a further discount, and so on and so forth. So, you know, creating this sort of market per se for services, you know, that are tied to the value of the assets, you know, that are created themselves, right? You know, and this kind of goes through three different use cases. One, the CAT scan example I used a moment ago, or MRIs. You know, bundled payments, you know, are also another key use case. And then again, as I mentioned, creating these secondary markets. You know, there is nothing in healthcare that's secondary, right? If you know, there's no such thing as the value of a procedure that someone has acquired, like an insurer, that they don't need anymore and can go resell, you know, to retain some of the value of that acquisition. You know, the other things that I heard in that IBM point or video that started us off, you know, looking at new pricing and contracting models, right? So for example, you know, saying, you know, we've got ways of tracking proof of threshold for contracting or proof of service for payments, proof of outcome, meaning, you know, has the patient achieved some outcome? And when the patient does achieve that outcome, then the person gets paid for a particular service, right? Creating more elasticity in pricing across the board. And a great example of that is pharma, you know, not being on a contract and saying, I buy a million Motrin for $500,000, but rather let supply and demand drive those, you know, those market pricing deals. And again, blockchain can be the trust layer that helps to make that stuff, to track and manage that value. So anyway, let's talk now about this credentials exchange. So credentials, if you're not familiar with credentialing and credentials, essentially if you provide care or you pay for care, or reimburse for care, I should say, You know, you have to go through a process with every hospital, outpatient clinic, health insurer, you know, telemedicine company, what have you, that you want to interact with from a professional perspective, and provide them a whole stack of information about you clinically and professionally. And then that organization takes that set of information that you gave them and verifies that it's accurate and correct. Then they go through the process of appointing someone to perform care and then ultimately be reimbursed for care through payer contracts and payer credentialing. It is a huge, laborious, 4 to 6 month long process for every single entity, you know, that does this work, right? And you know, it is an ideal use case for a blockchain driven solution. First of all, it's an administrative process and you're not touching sensitive data like PHI or transaction claims data and things like that. It's mostly paperwork and demographic data, right? And you know, most models that are out here in the marketplace that have been put in place are just creating more friction in the process, right? You know, the first big picture part of this problem is you have a very, very complex data set. Anything in the market can be called a credential. So whether it's your physician's medical license or it's a immunization record or a picture of your license plate for the parking department, any of this information can be requested and has to be provided by a practitioner in order to complete their credentialing process and be appointed or enrolled in a contract. There's no standard definitions of virtually any of this data. You know, one state's medical license data scheme may look completely different than another's. You know, one board certification may have a totally different schema than another, or does have a different schema than another. And it's basically this massive, you know, cache of data that exists throughout the marketplace. It's also hugely redundant. Every single hospital system, payer, outpatient clinic, network, what have you, that you're a member of needs to collect and verify your credentials information. In the state of Florida, it's very common for a practitioner to maintain credentials with 25 or 30 different independent organizations and basically be responsible for not only providing that data, but keeping it current continuously. Right, so it's just a massive example of failures in trust and transparency and redundancy across the marketplace. So what we've done is we've built a platform that is originally based on an engine that I developed for the military about 3 years ago that addressed the data complexity, the complexity of the analysis of that data, and the distribution of that data. Now we're layering blockchain into this platform to provide us with that transaction framework, with the ledger framework, and that trust and information sharing, you know, that does not exist today in the marketplace. If you're a technology person, you know, we're building this in a .NET framework simply because it is easier for us to get through technical due diligence with, you know, the huge insurers of the world and the huge health systems of the world versus a purely open source, kind of approach. Everything we've done has been written, in the latest and greatest, you know, technology per se. And, you know, we've got a very elegant solution that's massively scalable and interoperable. You know, a few other, I'm going to give you guys a quick demo of the ProCredX, you know, infrastructure. But, you know, just in closing on this side of the house, you know, there's also all kinds of other places in healthcare where we see obvious use cases for blockchain solutions. Data itself, right? Any kind of data that is not protected, you know, creating markets for that data to be exchanged by and between different counterparties. Clinical trials are a huge opportunity or maintain a huge opportunity for both reusing existing clinical trial data and having access to clinical trial data and knowing that it's accurate and has never been modified. You know, other things like patient recruitment, outcomes data collection, reimbursement for all kinds of strange use cases like orphan drugs and so forth, you know, that are out there. So, you know, the last point I want to make here is, you know, I'm a lifelong entrepreneur. I've built and developed, I think, 9 different companies and worked for probably 3 or 4 other startups. And this is a dream come true if you love innovation. You know, there is so much opportunity out there, and this technology is not, you know, ultra complex to work within. And, you know, by working with folks like Hashed Health, you know, we've been able to really begin to move the needle on real solutions to real problems, right? So if you give me one moment, I'm going to pause this screen and pull up a quick demo for you. And while I'm doing that, if anyone has any questions, please feel free to ask while I'm pulling this up. It's going to take me about 20 seconds. Yep. Well, I can barely hear you.
Okay. There's someone that wants a question. So are you open to that now?
Yeah, sure. Let me just go ahead. I'm setting this demo up, but please go ahead and ask.
Okay. Thanks, Anthony. Really helpful information. Another question I have is regarding your perspective on the supply of developers for blockchain, and also your comment on standards for blockchain development that might expedite people getting qualified in blockchain.
I'm going to give a little sales pitch, if you don't mind, my friend. There's an organization right across the bay in Tampa called Block Spaces. And that organization was run by, you know, a group of entrepreneurs and technology experts that is addressing the very problem you just described. They're focusing on education, resourcing, and helping to really help, you know, frankly, experienced developers in all candor, you know, learn about this technology and get them the skills and training that they need to, you know, to be effective quickly. Right. If you, I mean, just again, I'm not a solution architect or engineering manager, right? But you know, from what I've been able to see my own self is that if you've got some basic JavaScript, C, you know, C sharp, C++, you know, kinds of coding skills, learning the nuts and bolts of the technology and becoming effective at it is not a huge leap. You know, it's a couple of weeks of training and probably 2 to 3 months of app dev experience, you know, within an app dev project to get you where you're competent and capable of developing real work, right? So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
You bet. Okay, so can everybody see my screen again? Okay, now I do want to make a quick disclaimer. This is a demo. It's not using real data. And it's also, you know, if I've got any user experience people in the room, it's kind of pretty, but not real pretty. So, you know, when we go live, this will be much better looking than it looks right now, but it's, you know, this is what we've got for our prototypes and demos, right? So, you know, what we're looking at here is, is a user experience for someone who would not be connected electronically to the exchange through their existing credentialing system. So this person, Kim Montgomery, who, by the way, is a certified professional credentialing specialist, or CPCS. She's signed into the platform. She has three messages, you know, from different folks on the platform that are awaiting her. And she is currently working on getting credentials information for four different physicians at her hospital, which is Mercy Hospital. Again, this is all contrived. It's not real data, right? So what Mercy Hospital has done is they've gone up and they've set up a smart contract on the exchange that says, I want to collect this kind of data about practitioners that work for my organization, right? Think of each of these as classes or buckets of information, types of information, you know, about practitioners. And the reason why this is important is because their existing credentialing system may get, you know, licenses electronically already, or they may get DEA certifications from DEA directly electronically, and they don't need to use the exchange to gather that data. So they've gone through and they've created these smart contracts that say, I need you to go out and find this data for me. So for Dr. Chow, we can see that her last reappointment date was a little over 2 years ago. And again, this is a demo. She would actually be now not compliant because you have to redo these every 2 years, frankly. And we can see that, at least in this demo, that her credentials that we have on file for her are compliant with all of the rules that these smart contracts have about analyzing that data. So if we look at things like board certifications, we can see that she has two board certs on the exchange. They're active on the exchange. One active, you know, current and valid cert, and an inactive certification. That active cert is down here, and this is from the American Board of Surgery. And this is a specialty, is a type. Think of it for our developer friends that might be in the audience. This is the class of credential data that we are working with, right? It's the class of a specialty medical board certification. You can also have a class, you know, we have classes for things like postgraduate medical education or licensure or what have you, and that helps us to systematize the data a little more effectively. Within the data itself, we can see that this particular credential element was obtained directly, electronically, from the primary source, meaning the American Board of Surgery. We know it's a certification, we know it's a specialty board certification, and that this is the actual type. Remember I mentioned before, a credential can be anything. Well, we've taken this credential and we've typed it saying that for this particular credential exists on the exchange with this kind of data type. It's been registered as 120132 and it's version one of that credential type. We know where it came from, and then the metadata here that comes along with the board cert. It's only valid in the US, it's certificate number 29072, and it expires in 2020, and it was signed off by Haley Konopelski, right? We also see the blockchain side of this, and this is the actual recorded transaction on the blockchain itself, meaning that it exists as this artifact on the blockchain network, that it was directly verified with the primary source, that it was verified as being active without limitations, and the issuing authority, the images that came along with that that particular credential, what block it's stored in itself, the hash that cryptographically signs the data in that block, and the data that's involved in this credential, and this is very important because again, if anything changes, a pixel in an image changes, or a letter in data changes, the entire hash no longer works, and we automatically know and dispel that information from the blockchain itself, right? We know that this was last verified on the 22nd of February, that 22 organizations on the exchange have used this verification in their work, and that there is a 19-cent transaction fee associated with acquiring this particular credential. Right? Another example, another kind of credential that's very common and takes weeks or months to frankly acquire are postgraduate medical education credentials, right? So say for example, somebody requested, 5 years ago or 12 years ago, whatever the case may be, a medical degree. This particular physician is an osteopath, right? And she faxed in a copy of this to some hospital where she was applying for work, and they took that image and they went and verified it with West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine themselves, right? And what we have there is what we call verification of consensus, meaning that this medical degree from West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine with all of this metadata associated with it was verified by Tanya Walter back in April 2016, and then re-verified as being accurate and complete by Dr. Arvell Renner in February 18th, 2018. And what we know, we can see here that two independent, unaffiliated parties consumed and verified this credential themselves. And what we call here is verification by consensus, meaning that that independent parties have viewed this piece of paper and have gone through and verified that the data about this digital asset is accurate and correct. Okay, so this is an example of what we're doing and how a user might request credentials information, and a very very clear example of how blockchain is viewed and worked with in the market. Okay, so I know we've only got about about 9 minutes, and all candor, I have a hard stop at 6:30. So may I answer any questions that folks may have? And someone is going to have to repeat because I can barely hear who's asking the question.
Anthony.
Yes, ma'am.
And if you want, you can put visual back on.
If you want.
It's up to you.
Anthony, as someone who's worked in healthcare for over 40 years, I certainly understand all of the things that you're discussing in terms of the frustration. I think the sentence that you said, it's like you spent trillions of dollars over 40 years on tech, and where are we? You're right? Okay, so I totally agree with that. Now, the example that you just gave now is one where on board certification, these are public records. Okay, so if one wants to verify, that's accessible on public records.
Yep.
Which is, so I'm going to take you back a little bit, because honestly, at one point, I remember when UnitedHealthcare first came out with their Regenics company, and they were compiling information, and the idea was to compile information from different insurance carriers, and then use a stable platform. I don't really think that ever really took off to the point where it was originally used. So when you talk about all of the information, all of the other illustrations that you gave, for instance, hospital negotiations, you know, and you said it before, each hospital is contacted by each provider. Mm-hmm. They negotiate with what rates they're going to charge by procedure, mm-hmm. and they consider that confidential information. Mm-hmm. You started off this wonderful seminar by talking about blockchain being built upon truth and trust, mm-hmm. and that it's a sharing of that trust that builds the blockchain so that when people go to use it, they know that information is accurate.
Right.
So my question to you is, having been in the business myself in senior management with both the Blues system and Metropolitan Life, when they were in the healthcare, and then subsequently UnitedHealthcare, how do you perceive that you are going to get honest data, okay, that they're not willing to share now, to share with a tech company that then can be verified by users?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. So, you know, we're working right now with some of the largest health insurers in the United States. There's three or several, I should say, value propositions for them, right? One, some of these folks have amassed credentials data for hundreds of thousands of practitioners and have amassed it for years, right? You know, they understand that there is a substantial value in that, you know, in that data that they have about practitioners. So for them to be able to offer other organizations whom they historically have never had any sort of relationship with, to resell essentially that data to someone who wants it, you know, that's a hugely compelling value proposition for them.
Yeah, well, that's true about the credentialing, but that's only one part of the blockchain of value that you used in your illustrations in the beginning. So what I'm referring to is not the credentialing, because the credentialing makes the sense and is an easier sell, so yep. to speak, of a sharing of information, because it's public information.
Yep.
Granted, it's difficult to put it all the pieces together to make it easy to access, but it is public information. But I'm talking about the procedures, just like you said. You use the McDonald's as an illustration. Well, whether it's stem cell or it's knee replacement, you know, one place is charging one thing, another's negotiated something else. Right. So how do you think you're going to level the field on where that trust is on using blockchain information?
So that's a very good question, right? And the truth of the matter is that what blockchain will enable is, blockchain will enable the ability to force transparency where it's valid. You know, you made a good point about security and transparency, right? Well, there's lots of examples where you need permission, which is a term of art we use in this space, permission to have access to certain data. And that permission controls also, you know, how your information is or information in general is stored and managed on a blockchain solution. So for example, if we have patient data, let's claim procedural data, what have you, that is very, 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 very private, obviously cannot be disclosed to willy-nilly to, folks out there in the public. You have to have the permission to access that data, right? And what happens today and is that the data is stored in silos in hundreds of different places, about a particular patient, right? And what we see happening, we're not working on patient data as one of our use cases today. We know of several companies that are right now. What's happening is that data is going to be democratized to the patient, and the patient ultimately will have control of their own data and be able to disseminate, who that information goes to, and really move the control from these silos all over the place to one place where they're able to collect data about themselves from different systems that are storing that information, and then push that information where it needs to go, in their universe of healthcare interactions. Right.
I think you're doing a great job. I wish you a lot of luck. It certainly is needed. And I'd like to invite you to be on my podcast series.
Sure, you bet. You bet. I would love to. Okay. Well, we've got 2 minutes left. Is there maybe one more question?
Yes. Bernie?
Thank you very much.
Here's the mic.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is a data-intensive industry. And I see in here for every developer, there must be 50 coders pull all this information together and record it. Am I wrong? Where are all the people coming from who are going to build this industry?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, and this isn't a skill, to be a blockchain developer, this isn't a skill set that is far from any other kind of new language or protocol. Whether it's Python or JavaScript or what have you. The move from what you may currently know to this technology itself is very transferable. A great example on your labor supply question. Again, the guys across the bay over at Block Spaces, they're partnered with the University of Panama, and they have a program where they're taking computer science graduates from that university and enrolling them directly into a 90-day, blockchain development course, and then bringing them either here or off, nearshoring to them in Panama, work. So, there's a huge wave on the tech side to build this skill set up and deploy it.
I got that. Thank you.
You bet. Well, folks, I'd like to thank you all very much. I do very much apologize for not being with you there in person. I truly wanted to be, but as business goes, things didn't work out in the best way. But regardless, it's been a pleasure to have an hour to spend with you all. I'm sure Henry's got my contact information. If you'd like to follow up and have a follow-up conversation, please feel free to shoot me an email, and we'll see about getting on a phone call or getting a cup of coffee or what have you. If you'd like. All right.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you all very much. Have a great night.
Thank you.